Physics World.
Hello, and welcome to the Physics World Weekly Podcast. I'm Hamish Johnston. Coming up in this episode, we explore the weird and wonderful world of active matter with one of the leading physicists working in the field. But first, this Sunday, April the 14th, is World Quantum Day, and Physics World, along with our colleagues at IOP Publishing, have put together a package of quantum-related resources that we know you'll enjoy. The best way to find this material is to type Celebrating World Quantum Day with IOP Publishing into your favorite web browser. There, you'll find links to quantum-related IOPP journals and links to special issues on quantum-related topics such as cold atoms in space, the societal aspects and impacts of quantum technologies, and quantum technologies for fundamental physics. Meanwhile, over at Physics World, you can read about all things quantum on our website. Just click on our quantum page, which you can access via the hamburger icon at the top left of our homepage. There, you'll find an eclectic mix of news, feature articles, and opinion, all focused on quantum science and technology. From the 14th of April, IOP Publishing will be offering a World Quantum Day discount on a selection of its ebooks. This is valid until the 31st of May. And IOPP will be running a quantum-focused online peer review excellence workshop on the 19th of April. So do check that out.
Hi, I'm Catherine Skipper, a features editor at Physics World, and today I'm going to be talking to Tanny Liverpool about how we can use statistical physics to answer outstanding questions in biology. Tanny is a professor of theoretical physics at the University of Bristol, where he's based in the Department of Mathematics. He was also one of the organisers of the recent programme New Statistical Physics in Living Matter at the Isaac Newton Institute at the University of Cambridge. Tanny, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Catherine. Happy to be here.
Firstly, when we think about the fundamentals of biology, we think about signaling between cells and interactions between molecules. But one of the arguments of the research that you do is that some quite complex biological behaviors can be described at a very fundamental level using statistical physics, and actually, in some cases, can only be understood if you have an appreciation of statistical physics. So can you start off by giving some examples of where statistical physics is so important for understanding living systems?
Okay. I would say at its core, statistical physics is the study of interacting particles or interacting agents. So typically one has many of them, many agents, and they interact with each other. And what we have found, let's say over the last maybe couple of centuries, is that there's emergent behavior that comes out of these interactions. And statistical physics has been very successful in describing what I would say the behaviors of passive matter. So essentially our traditional solids, liquids, or gases, as how and understanding how those properties emerge from the components. Now, if you have a biological system, you have some of those features. One, you have usually many particles, many interacting agents. Sometimes these particles could be molecules inside a cell, but sometimes they could even be the cells themselves interacting with each other. And even at the highest level, you could even imagine thinking about groups of organisms like flocks of birds or herds of wild beast, which undergo some kind of collective behavior. And so essentially the approach that I and people who work in similar fields to me take is we try to understand how some of these large scale emergent behavior emerges from the building blocks. Living systems are generally made up of complicated building blocks. So the scope for complex behavior is that much richer. So in some sense, we could probably expect that the tools that we have from statistical mechanics are going to help us to start on this journey. but they're probably not going to be sufficient. We'll need new tools which are to take account of the fact that living systems are more complex than, let's say, inanimate matter.
Okay, so I guess that's the next question. How much we can use the laws of statistical physics that we have now and how much they might need to be extended or adapted. Mm-hmm. So you co-authored a Nature Worldview recently with Tomohiro Sasamoto called The Biological Control of Living Systems Calls for New Laws of Statistical Mechanics. So can you explain what the challenge is of extending statistical physics to a living system and what kind of new laws of statistical physics we might need to do that?
So the program we organized at the Newton Institute was, the idea behind it was to bring together people working in statistical mechanics, so people working in very mathematical area of describing interacting particle systems, physicists who are interested in biological physics, and biologists, you know, who are interested in seeing how collective behavior, particularly at the scales of cells and tissues, emerges from the components. And so the idea was to get people together and over the course of several months, try to get people from the different communities to talk to each other to sort of tackle some of the outstanding problems in the field. One thing I should say is that biology is rich and very diverse, and there are many problems in biology. I think where statistical physics will play a role, but in our program, we were actually focused more or less on biology at the cellular and tissue scale, not really thinking about many organisms in an ecosystem or something like that. First thing I should say is that one has to restrict the range of problems that you study, because there's an infinite number of things that one can study. So focusing on this sort of tissue and cellular scale, then there's something which is very timely about studying these things at this particular moment. And that's because there's new tools which have emerged. And these tools have emerged over the last 20 years. And essentially there are different developments in microscopy, which allow one to track molecules in cells and tissues with unprecedented accuracy. And so this is essentially driven by fluorescence, the ability to fluorescently label particular molecules. So you can track particular molecules in a cell, and you can then try to understand how the dynamics of these molecules affects the behavior that you observe in the tissues and the cells. So there's been this drive from experiments. So there's lots of data, and we're also able to view things. We're also able to track things in time, if you want, for extended periods. And so this now made it start to be feasible to start thinking about using ideas of statistical mechanics to study these systems. So that's kind of, if you want, the context in which things happened. And then once we have this new bits of data, and data is continually being generated, so it's very rich area, I think, for the next few decades. There's going to be lots of new data and lots of problems that this data is going to generate, which will be, I think, will be of great interest going forward. Okay, so that's the context. We've got lots of new data, and then we need to understand this data. And then issue with having lots of data is that you can get lost in the data. So an important point of physics is providing an explanatory framework, a way to so it's not just about data and modeling the data, but it's also about using the data in a way that enables us to understand what's going on. The new data has generated work for lots of different fields. There's bioinformatics, there's data science, which are all contributing to trying to understand biological systems better. But what the statistical physicist can bring is the search for organizing principles. And so in some sense, that's kind of our goal. Our goal is just to find these principles. And of course, we are agnostic. We'll use whatever we can find. But one of the areas which looks very promising is the area which is now called active matter. And the idea behind it, which is a relatively simple idea, is to try to generalize some of the features that we know very well from equilibrium system mechanics by adding the fact that living agents in generally are not at equilibrium. They're driven by some source of energy, and this source of energy can lead to motion and can lead to essentially work being done by these agents. And so in some sense, the idea, back to my mind, is let's just add this new feature to interacting particle systems, and let's see whether we can use it to understand some of the phenomena that we see. So, and what has been found over the last few decades is that these systems have a very rich behavior. So one finds new phases, which you don't see in equilibrium systems. One finds interesting transitions from one state to the other that you don't see in equilibrium systems. And so in some sense, one of the things that we are trying to do, I would say, is to try to see whether we can apply these ideas from active matter to looking at biology at the cell and tissue scale. And that was sort of one of the themes of the program we had in Cambridge.
All right, thanks. So I guess you mentioned that you were looking at statistical physics on like the cellular and tissue scale. So can you talk a bit more about your research on that and what kinds of systems you're interested in and what kind of questions you're interested in answering?
I am a statistical mechanic. So one strand of my research is doing, I would say, traditional statistical mechanics of equilibrium systems. And another strand of my research is looking at these driven active systems and trying to apply some of these ideas to biology. And I should say that even within the field of studying biological systems, one finds that equilibrium statistical physics and equilibrium physics can play a role. For example, one of the things that I'm very interested in is this self-assembly, which is understanding how particles which have complex shapes can spontaneously self-organize to form hierarchical structures. And this is a pure equilibrium effect. It happens just because the particles have funny shapes or funny sets of interactions, and then that can cause them to self-assemble. An example of that is, in biology, for example, is the self-assembly of viral capsids. So a virus is made up of a bunch of proteins which spontaneously self-assemble. Some people don't consider viruses to be alive because they don't have a metabolism like we do, and essentially they just sponge off the metabolism of their hosts. But what they do is they're essentially a machine which makes its components, which then self-assembles spontaneously. And so one of my interests is understanding how this self-assembly happens. And this is purely equilibrium physics, but it's applied to biology. One of the workshops in our program was on the self-assembly and viruses. I would say my passion really has been sort of this non-equilibrium physics and active matter and how it can be applied to biology. And so I would say that there are two strands that I would say. One strand is to try to make biomimetic systems, systems which have some features of biological systems, but which can be more controlled and which one can then study using the tools that we have. Another thing which maybe is more eye-catching is trying to apply these ideas of active matter in looking at processes in biology at a tissue scale, such as wound healing. So we've all had wounds at some point in our lives. There's some damage to your outer layer of your body, and we've seen wounds heal. And so a project that I've been working on over the last few years has been trying to understand how the collective behavior of cells can lead to a wound closing. And for that, we collaborate with biologists here in Bristol who are doing experiments on model organisms. So the experiments are actually done on fruit flies, and small wounds are made. And using these new techniques from these new observational techniques from microscopy, one can track how these wounds close. And in principle, what one would like to know is how the different cell behaviors contribute to that, to the wound healing process. And the cell behaviors that we've looked at have been the changes of the shapes of the cells. So we could think of the cell as being like a kind of elliptical, squishy ball. And we want to track how the shapes of the cells change when there's a wound, and as the wound is healing. The other thing we'd like to track is how the cells move. We'd like to understand how the cells move. And another thing that's of interest to the biologists is how cells divide, and is the division affected by the wounds? So this project involves biologists who are doing experiments on looking at wounds in these fruit flies. And then we make active matter theories, so theories of interacting agents, which have this additional energy input into them, which we then can try to compare with the biology, with the experimental data. And we can explain certain features of the experiments, but quite a lot of features still remain a mystery. So I'll tell you about one particular thing which I found very interesting, which is that, so as I said, so the experiments are you make a wound and then you you see what happens. And because of the work that we've done, we made this the rather surprising observation, which maybe after it was observed, it was not so surprising, which was that after the wound is made, we can track the cell divisions. And what we find is that while the wound is closing, there are very few cell divisions happening. There are much fewer cell divisions happening than normal. And then after the wound has closed, shortly after the wound is closed, there's a burst of cell divisions. And there's lots of new cells, and they happen at some distance, particular distance from the wound. And so so now this kind of level of understanding what's happening in wound healing, it was just not possible without this combination of biologists doing the experiments, theoretical physicists, applied mathematicians doing the modeling, and trying to disentangle all the different processes that are going on.
You mentioned that if you look at the behavior of cells, you can see phase transitions and different phases that you wouldn't see in equilibrium matter. And you mentioned how theoretical physicists can inform our understanding of biology, but can it work in the opposite direction? Because nature has obviously had millions of years to find really efficient ways of doing work. So I'm wondering whether if you're a materials physicist or a mathematician, or an engineer, whether you can maybe in the future take inspiration from the way that nature is able to exploit statistical physics in such efficient ways.
So that's a very question. And so in fact, actually, there's a whole strand of research of people who are doing what I would call biomimetic, I'd say physics or biomimetic material science, where one looks at solutions that nature has found and then tries to mimic them or to copy them or to use aspects of that. So I think that that's already being used a lot, I think, in designing, for example, hydrophobic surfaces or things like that. So people have used biological surfaces, which we know to be hydrophobic, to try to inform design of hydrophobic surfaces. I would say that one area which I think is which I think is really exciting, is the idea of whether we can use the non-equilibrium aspect of biology in interesting new ways in materials physics or condensed matter physics. So where one can try to prepare materials which are prepared in some way out of equilibrium with energy stored, which can then release the energy in some nice controlled way in order to perform some function. So I think the idea that I guess that what I'd like to think of in, let's say, maybe 10 or 20 years, is that we could imagine having smart non-equilibrium materials which are able to perform functions, complex functions, and respond to the environment. They're going to be probably going to be a lot simpler than biological systems, but maybe they might just have they'll just have that one extra layer of control that one can get by using non-equilibrium physics. So I definitely think that that's definitely a very promising long-term area of research.
And you've touched on some of the potential applications of this work, but I'm just as a final thought, what are the big challenges for theoretical physicists and people working in statistical mechanics in this field at the moment, and what research are you particularly excited about that's happening at the moment?
Predicting the future is always unpredictable. I can talk about certain things that I find interesting. One area where I see a gap in what we can currently do is coupling, let's say, what I would say chemistry and mechanics, and having feedback between different scales. So maybe let me explain a little bit what I mean by that. So typically in statistical mechanics, what we normally think about is we have a bunch of agents, and this would be the case of, for example, water molecules. Bring them together, and then they form a liquid at a certain temperature, and we can understand the behavior of the liquid. Now, one of the interesting things about biology is that we could now have components which can then collectively work together to make some large-scale macroscopic phenomena, and then this phenomena could then have a feedback so that it affects the behavior of the components themselves. So there's a feedback between what's happening at the large scales, what's happening at the small scale. So the components themselves are not static, they're changing. So therefore you can have this sort of feedback between what's happening at large scales and what's happening at small scales. And this is something that I think is going to be very exciting, studying this and putting together all the different bits that one needs to understand how one can understand this, and probably this is going to be the way in which, going back to what we talked about applications, this is going to be the way in which we're going to develop applications, because that's, you can clearly see that if you can understand how this can be done, then this allows you to make materials which can respond in clever ways to the environment. So I think that this feedback between what I would call the microscopic physics, the interacting agents, and the macroscopic physics, and having that go both ways, not just one way, I think that's very interesting and very exciting. And I think that's going to be an area which certainly I'm going to spend a lot of time working on.
Right. Thank you very much. That was a really great introduction to an application of statistical physics that's very different from the context in which most people are taught it, I think. And it sounds like a field where there's going to be a lot of exciting work done in the next couple of years. So thank you, Tani.
That was Tani Liverpool in conversation with Catherine Skipper. Thanks to both of them for a fascinating discussion. And a special thanks to our producer, Callum Jelf. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this week's podcast. We hope you enjoy World Quantum Day, and we'll be back again next week. In the meantime, do check out the latest episode of the Physics World Stories podcast. Host Andrew Glester is in conversation with the composer Amanda Lee Falkenberg, whose The Moon's Symphony takes listeners on an epic journey through the science and stories of the moons of the solar system. The podcast includes music from the symphony, and you can find it on the Physics World website or at your favorite podcast provider. Just look for the headline, An Orchestral Trip Through the Moons of Our Solar System. We're getting really excited about the launch of Physics World Live, a series of online panel debates in which you can join leading scientists discussing hot topics in physics and put your questions to the experts. First up is Physics World Live Quantum Sensors, which is on the 2nd of July, 2024. You'll find out why quantum sensors could be the quantum 2.0 technology with the greatest potential for near-term, real-world applications. On September 26th, join us for Physics World Live, The Future of Particle Physics, where we mark the 70th anniversary of CERN by debating where the world's next collider should be. Finally, on the 21st of November, there's Physics World Live Battery Technology. We'll discuss how efficient batteries will play a vital role in the transition to a low-carbon, green economy. Register now for all three free events by going to the Physics World Live section of the Physics World website.
Physics World.